Brendan Murphy in the building.
Hello, how you doing, mate?
Very good to see you, dude. I saw your show posted up on Facebook, and what did I see? Let me see what I saw. In real time, it said Buffy revamped, and it's a picture of you dressed as Spike from Buffy. Hopefully there's lots of people who remember this. I'm not really focused on the people who don't. 1 hour show, 7 seasons, 1 Spike, a fast-paced hour of jokes and songs. I saw that and I thought that was so interesting and striking. And I just immediately bought tickets. So whatever you did has worked.
Well, that's good. That's very good to hear. I'm glad that our marketing strategy is paying off.
Brilliant. And just let's talk about that. We'll talk about loads of things, but just to have a one-man show with Spike, has that been easy to get people on board? Or was it sort of you get mixed reactions? Because it's so niche.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're still sort of figuring out what the reaction's going to be. I suppose the obvious one would be any sort of Buffy the Vampire Slayer fans should be on board. We still need to figure out what the cross-section is with, Buffy fans and theatre-goers. I suspect they're up for it. You know, it's... I did a show, I'm still kind of doing the show, which is it's called Friend, the one with Gunther. So it's a parody of... Oh, a little cat is meowing at me. It's a parody of Friends. And that's very broad. Everyone knows what Friends is. You know, even if you weren't a huge Friends fan, you kind of know about the main characters. Whereas Buffy, I feel, is a more niche cult following rather than... I mean, it's still huge, but we're going to be tapping into a slightly different fandom here, I think.
So are you a fan of the show, or did you... I'm trying to work out how you came up with that choice. Did you think, okay, look, I'm doing a one-man show. You've done the Gunther thing before. You know that formula works. And Friends is so universal. But you're thinking, okay, let's do it again, but pick something that's, you know, you picked a very great choice. So how did that come about, picking Spike as a character and going with the Buffy thing?
Well, I mean, I suppose they say sort of write what you know. And I'm a huge Buffy fan. Let's see. It came out. So I was probably a little... young for the first time it rounds, because I know the first series was out in 97, so I was about 10. But then again, it's kind of aspirational, because you know, you're looking up to them, and they were in the first series, in the first season, they're 16. So it's a very sort of cool version of what high school's gonna be. So yeah, I loved it the first time round, and then now, as a grown up, as an adult who gets to sort of write comedy shows, I thought, what better to do than to be able to play one of my absolute heroes, and just revisit the series that caused so much joy in my childhood.
And again, like, it's such a cool choice, and you look pretty much bang on like that. I hope you walk around the street. So, do you have to like? So let's talk about the acting side of things. Do you have to like go method on it? Is it something that's quite easy for you to play because you've seen it so many times?
Well, I haven't started biting people, if that's what you mean.
Oh, he's a vampire, everybody. If you don't know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, obviously, but Spike is a notorious vampire, one of the most interesting of the characters.
Yeah.
You had a very great arc, and you're playing, again, you're saying 7 seasons. So how is this going to translate onto the stage, if you can say?
Well, I suppose the way to describe it is it's kind of like a sort of reduced Shakespeare company style vibe. So it's all 7 seasons as told by Spike. But it's also a kind of commentary. It's a parody. It's a sort of a loving sort of spoof. Holding it up, looking at it in a new light, obviously it was made 97 to 2004. So, you know, it's a slightly different world that it exists in. I'm very happy to say that the series still holds up really well, I think, by modern standards. But there's a few things that's like, Xander's behavior. It's like, oh, is he an incel or is he just a 16-year-old boy? You sort of don't know at times. There's also a sort of a clear lack of diversity certainly in the early seasons, that's sort of quite obvious. But yeah, so we're sort of looking at all these different things while also just having fun and revisiting the whole world.
And the world, because, you know, based on the Gumfer, the Friends one that you did before, and you've done a few others, you build these amazing sets. So is this going to be like this again, or is this something you're building towards, or are we going to be immersed in this Buffy universe?
Well, hopefully that's what we're driving towards. This is going to be its first outing, so we're just doing 5 shows at the King's Head Theatre in October. So the hope is that we try it out, people buy tickets, that it's popular enough to sort of give it another outing, and then I think next year it will have the hopefully the big budget version of it.
Oh, that's brilliant. So you're kind of showing people right now how it kind of works.
Yeah.
You know, when you create a one-man show. So are you self-funding this yourself?
No, it's being produced by Seabright Productions, who produced my previous show, The Friends Parody. And also they do an amazing show called Potted Potter, which tours the world. And it's sort of similar concept, except for it's a two-man show. One guy plays Harry, the other one plays everyone else. And that's how I got to know them, sort of playing the part of everyone else in the Harry Potter world. And yeah, just going off on tour. It's also one of the things that really inspired me, because unlike any other theatre show that I'd done, the audience come in with so much love and enthusiasm for like the source material. They're just there for fun, and they know more about it than you do. You know, people go crazy, they dress up to come along to see the show. So it's just such a good positive vibe in the theater.
Well, this is the cool thing. Like, you've kind of found your niche with these shows, these character shows. So would you say, you know, is it fair to say that's your thing? Are you more, is that stand-up comedy? Or is it sort of like, are you an actor, character actor? What would you,
yeah,
would you kind
yeah.
of say your, how you kind of appear to people?
Well, I mean, I suppose I sort of started in the traditional sort of acting world, went to drama school, and I really enjoyed comedy, you know, from an early age. That's something that always appealed to me. And then I got into improv. I did a few improv courses in the UK with Monkey Toast and the Free Association. And then went on to do, sort of different improv shows and then my own character comedy shows. So it's interesting because I suppose people do often want to find, a pigeonhole that is, it just makes it easier to understand, like, what am I dealing with? Who is this guy? But yeah, I suppose now over the last few shows, certainly I found my way into the sort of a parody character comedy world. And that's where I'm sitting for now.
Well, look, it's amazing. And I just want to say, like, how do you take a show, right? So you take something like the Spike character, and where do you begin with that? Do you start threading scenes together, or you just start with just audience interaction? How would that person just be on stage, and how would that banter be? How do you approach that, and what did you decide to do?
Yeah, well, I mean, it starts with, I suppose, finding a source material, a TV show, a book, whatever it is, that really appeals to you, that you're willing to just get lost in for a year or so, however long it takes to write the show. And then it's a case of, I mean, I had so much fun just writing down ideas based on my memories of the show. And then I did the sort of the deep dive rewatch.
All 7 seasons, you rewatched?
Oh, everything. Yeah, absolutely.
What did you learn from it, from watching all of the 7 seasons? Because Buffy Vampire Slayer was a great show, lots of gems, lots of jokes. But, you know, we were getting it broken down. So you just watched it all in one
season. Oh, yeah.
Is there anything that you gained from that?
Well, first of all, it's, as I said before, it really stands up. It's funny, it's scary, you care about the relationships, they're really well written, really well acted. And it's kind of amazing from such like a group of actors that were so young at the time. I mean, they're older than their playing age, but they're still sort of brand new to it. Yeah, and also something that occurred to me was that there's so many references throughout, like every single Monster of the Week episode is based on, you know, some of them quite obvious draws, Frankenstein, Dracula, things like that, but others sort of quite niche horror tropes. So once you start rewatching it with a more critical eye, you think, ah, oh, okay, now I've got to go back and watch those. And you've got to do the deep dive and find out what people are saying on Reddit about it. What are all the references about? Is there something that I've missed? So yeah, you've got to get really nerdy on the show.
Favorite episode?
Ooh, that is too tough to call. I mean, there's absolute standout episodes. So, I mean, the classic ones that come up time and time again are like The Body. So are we doing spoilers? I'll say spoiler alert now.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Yeah. Wah, wah. So Buffy's mum, Joyce, dies.
And, oh, no.
Hey, it comes to us. Or
I don't know if you're going to say that.
But the episode that deals with it is just amazing. It's like a standout piece that it's like an indie film, and it just deals with death and loss and grieving. Well, the different sort of stages of loss, and it's happening to a character that Joyce has been the maternal figure with, you know, mixed results, but she's been a real sort of the heart of the series for so long, and then Buffy has to go through this, and we've seen her just joking and fighting and you know, dealing with these monsters with ease, and then she has to deal with something really normal, well, you know, really a matter of fact, because she's not slain by a demon, she just has a brain aneurysm and that's it. So that's a standout. Then there's also like monster ones that are brilliant, like Hush, these freaky sort of guys that go around stealing everyone's voices. That's a great episode. But then, I mean, personally, the Spike episodes I absolutely loved. And whenever he turns up, you know, he doesn't turn up until the second season. But when he does, he's just such a badass. He's got so many great lines. He's brilliantly performed by James Masters. And like all of the sort of development that he goes through from like the big bad, the bad guy in the second season, to the sort of reluctant ally, and then to a kind of like semi-love interest, and then a straight up just hero. It's an amazing character arc to follow. And I mean, obviously I'm biased because I was writing the show from his perspective, but yeah, on my rewatch, I really found whenever he turned up, I was like, yes, okay, this is going to be a good episode.
Yeah, and he was so funny at times, because there was a time when I think he was pretending to be in a wheelchair, or he was or wasn't.
Yeah.
And he just kind of like this pitiful character that kind of like, when he was a bit sort of powerless, that's when he was kind of really funny and kind of pitiful. And
absolutely. Yeah. I think I read somewhere that he was originally written just as a one season bad guy, really just come in, attack Buffy, and then get sort of chased off at the end. But he was so popular that they thought, okay, let's bring him back. Let's see what can happen. And obviously it grew into this amazing twist and turn. But yeah, the sort of the wheelchair element. he gets injured and then he's trapped there. But then he also uses it to his own advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah, he goes on a pretty wild ride.
Interesting character. There's so many things, because the legacy of how he got his coat and just all this aspects looking like Billy Idol and all this sort of thing.
This is the thing, you can just keep on going into this, they build the universe so well that that you just find little threads as you go along, and then that colors your understanding of the earlier episodes. And obviously he's I think I should know this, 160 something years old.
Oh really?
Like as a character. So that obviously means there's such a rich history for him to draw from, and then, you know, me to draw from as well. Coming from Victorian England, being the scourge of Europe, traveling over to China and then over to America and running with all these sort of different vampires, but also having this cultured sort of soft poet heart that secretly he's actually a romantic and he covers it by trying to be a bad boy.
Yes, he was kind of a bit of a nerdy side before he got bitten. So
yeah.
And why is he called Spike? Is there a reason? What's his real name? And what's his origin before?
He was known as William the Bloody, allegedly because according to Spike, because it's a sort of terrifying name, and you know, that's the sort of thing he did. Although, according to others, it's because of his bloody, awful poetry. That's what his detractors would say. He got the name Spike. Again, apparently because he tortured his victims with railroad spikes. So pretty gruesome stuff. I mean, in the show, we get to know and love him as this sort of charming sort of character. But he's also he's a vampire, a murderer. He's killed two slayers. He's a genuinely dangerous force within the Buffyverse.
So why do you think, here's another question, why do you think people are kind of like attracted to this whole vampire thing? You know, they're always like the love interest, you know, like not Twilight, but, you know, just Buffy. And any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think as far as Hollywood horror goes, there's nothing much better than a vampire. I mean, I love zombie movies. You know, but it's quite hard to get behind a single zombie and really root for them.
What's your best zombie movie and best vampire movie?
Oh, I don't know. Because, again, there's always so many amazing references, like, packed within them. Shaun of the Dead, brilliant. I mean, brilliant. I also like Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead, even the
next show, by the way.
The zombie movies in
something
one.
Like that. Yeah, the zombie who's in the background. You know?
Yeah. It would be a very slow moving show.
It's a 3-hour show. So.
Just shuffling along. But no, I mean, vampires are, well, it's all about sex. It's all about this sort of otherness. It's about death. The great beyond, you know, this immortality, and I suppose the sort of the way that we worship youth as a culture, it's not something that started recently. It's been going on for hundreds of years, thousands probably. But for someone to be this perfect Dorian Gray character, to never age beyond a certain point, to live for the night. They're all very sort of alluring, templates that I think we know it's impossible to have, but it's temptation, I think, at its best. And that's why people keep on coming back to it.
Yeah, I think my favorite movie was Interview of a Vampire.
Oh, yeah.
Captured that. Yeah, it kind of had that Buffy-esque vibe with it, but they captured that sort of the byproduct of being a vampire is that you have this sort of worldly knowledge, and you have this sort of outsider intelligence, which
absolutely it's a huge amount of wisdom that they sort of managed to accrue over this sort of potentially infinite lifespan, you know. But then again, I like when they sort of play with that, because to be honest, if you turn like a complete idiot into a vampire, they're still going to be an idiot, which is what most of Sunnydale is populated with. Thankfully for the people that live there, you know, there's only now and then someone like Angel or Spike or the Master turns up and really causes some trouble.
In real life, I mean, you probably won't be a vampire, but would you? Would you get that opportunity?
It's tricky, isn't it? So you've got immortality, which it depends how you think about it. I mean, you could always stake yourself if it got too much.
If it goes wrong, just, yeah, because how do they... I mean, you don't get buried alive if you're a vampire. You know, that's the worst.
No. Thing. Well, you know, hopefully you'd be able to sort of... No, I mean, yeah, that would be tricky.
You've got the whole sunlight thing as well. You can't go out in the sun.
Yeah, I'm quite pale as it goes. I've got that Irish heritage. So I don't go out in the sun too much anyway. So I'd probably be fine.
So you're probably all right.
Yeah.
The whole blood
although
thing.
Although there's... I wonder where the sort of the money would come from. You really are forced into a life of crime, I suppose.
Oh, unless
you could work nights, I suppose. You could just work nights.
Unless you outlive your first human wife,
I suppose. Oh,
that's that you inherit everything at the end.
Yeah, that's it. I'd have to marry rich.
Something like that. They always seem to get donated something, innit? They take it from somebody. I mean, they live around so long.
You get like, effectively, you get one inheritance, don't you? And if you're not born into a rich family, then I don't know. Maybe you just become really charming when you're a vampire, and then you have the skills.
You dress better, sure, as well. They tend to like their fashion sense seems to become a little bit more layered.
Oh yeah,
color coordinating. Soon as they become a vampire, what's that?
It's kind of wild because they don't have a reflection. So, like, how do they do their hair? How do they know?
Lots and lots of stylists.
Yeah.
They have to get second opinions. You know, that's what it is.
I think that's it. You sort of have to find your local vampire community, assimilate, and just hope that they're not giving you bad advice.
That's it. So maybe that's what the charming aspect is. They're just trying to be outgoing, like, hey, what does my outfit look like?
Yeah, that sounds like a nice fraternity to join, to be honest.
But yeah, lots of crazy creatures in this. Is this completely on your own? Or have you got like cast and a crew, or is there like things behind the scenes?
Well,
how does this all...
It is a one-man show. Hmm. So I have written it and I perform it myself. I go through all of the different characters. Hmm. So at times it doesn't feel like I'm alone on stage, but technically I am. Although I work with a great director and friend of mine, Hamish McDougall, mm-hmm. who, shout out Hamish, how you doing? He's brilliant and he helps script edit. So he worked on the last show that I did, Friends, the one with Gunther. And he directs the show. So we're just about to go into rehearsals tomorrow, actually.
Oh,
yeah, it's all happening.
With an audience rehearsals.
Oh no.
Like a dry run, yeah. Okay, cool.
Just sort of first outing, sort of getting the show into mm-hmm. shape before the previews. But yeah, so he's my main sort of creative collaborator, and then I have a bunch of great people at Seabright Productions who help basically make the show happen. They get a stage manager involved, someone that's actually really going to sort of operate it and put me in touch with different designers and the space. And then hopefully if it goes well, they end up booking the tour as well. So I can go off and take it to people around the UK.
That's so cool. Like literally, I hope it's good that it's a theatre. I hope like people see more of the, you know, you'll probably put a trailer out after it's done, obviously, have visual content.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. At the moment, we're a little light. We've just got the poster and we've got a few more photos that are going to drop.
The poster's cool, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Really well made. It really looks great.
I was really happy with the way it turned out. Michael Worley and Rebecca Pitt sort of designed that, and they're both brilliant for all of your photo and poster needs. Check them out.
Oh, they smashed it. And so you said there's songs in it. We haven't talked about the music.
So. Oh, yeah.
So is that a big part of it? Is it comedy songs, or are you playing music? Is it kind of like a Tim Minchin thing?
I would love to be competitive.
Oh, he's quite good, actually, to be fair. He's probably one of the world's best piano players, so it's pretty high standard. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Musical.
Yeah, a musical comedy element.
How far do you go?
Music to me is hugely important. I listen to it all day, every day. And when I'm writing, especially, I put together a playlist and I just let it play while I'm writing. So I listen to the Buffy soundtrack, also a lot of fan-made Buffy playlists. So loads of great American sort of indie bands from late 90s to sort of mid-noughties. And then I just listened to a load of general sort of 90s and noughties stuff, the kind of stuff that I was listening to at the time as well. So it's a massive nostalgia fest. There's tracks throughout the show that hopefully people will just be like, oh my God, absolute banger.
Okay. Oh yeah, you're going to be playing the music.
I hope. Yeah. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah.
Good.
And then we have, I do parody songs through it as well. There's a handful of songs that I've sort of thrown together that are sort of based on tracks that you might recognize.
Oh, this is going to be amazing. Has a writer ever reached out to you, you know, the Buffy creators or the actor who played him? Have they ever tried to reach out to you, go, or are they happy that you're doing it? Do they know? Okay, legally?
I'm not sure that they know it's happening.
Can you do that, like, legally?
Yeah, it's fine until I get the cease and desist order. No, luckily there's parody law, which protects creatives and comedians that you have fair use over something if you're making a parody, rather than sort of trying to cash in exclusively and say this is official canon.
This is official canon.
Story. Yeah, this is very much unofficial parody show. It's like a fan fiction, effectively a retelling of a show that we all love. But I would love Joss to reach out if he wanted to. And James Masters, the original Spike. Yeah, he's American. I actually met a comedian I was up at Edinburgh Fringe, and she was telling me that she was friends with the whole Buffy gang and knew them back in the day. So she was saying that I should definitely reach out to Spike and see what he's up to. I've certainly been doing a lot of digging and finding out what they're all up to, some doing better than others.
What are they up to?
Well, I think the ones that you still see on TV, all good. There's some controversies at the moment. Joss Whedon has been accused of creating an abusive sort of environment on the set, which is not good. Mm. I don't know all of the ins and outs, but from what I've read of it, I know Charisma Carpenter, who played Cordelia, said that it was really toxic and she was really unhappy on Buffy and Angel. He hasn't responded to the allegations, but I know a lot of people have sort of distanced themselves from him.
Is it because what? Because he's sort of like a control freak, or is it more like
that seems to be the case? Yeah, that
like
there
a
was
a bully on set or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, but again, this is all just from what I've read.
What we've read, yeah,
exactly. But yeah, I know that Anthony Stewart Head, who played Giles, was very upset to find out about it because he didn't know, and I think a lot of the things that went on seemed to happen more or less in isolation from the rest of the gang.
And towards more the female?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, that does seem to be the case. And then poor Nicholas Brendan, who played Xander, unfortunately, seems to have had a bit of a bad time. Not in great shape, and there are certainly allegations of abuse.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So here's the thing. When I revisited the show, I knew there were going to be some skeletons.
So are you bringing this up in the show? Or are you being... you probably wouldn't. That's bad taste, but would you...
I'm not delving into every element. I'm certainly not dealing with any allegations, but I am holding it up and looking at the show itself and saying, like, this is funny. You're in California. You're in Southern California, right next to the Mexican border, and everyone's white. Really? That's fine. I'm not also taking it to task. I'm not... it's a loving parody and a recreation of a world that we can all still enjoy while also acknowledging there are some failings. It wouldn't be the same show if it was made today, but I'm not there to slag it off either.
Oh, that's good. So it's coming out of a place of love. And obviously, yeah, I'm not a big fan. I can tell that. That's why I think, if you reach out to them, they'll see it more as an actor paying a homage and, recapturing it, because it looks legit.
That's what I'm trying to do. I love the show. I think they all just did such a great job. It's just one of those, as an actor as well, it just strikes me as must have been one of the dream jobs to work on. You just do one job and you're done. I mean, if you did Buffy and then never worked again, you've already done enough.
Do you think every actor just needs that? Just like one hit and then you're kind of...
Yeah, I think so. Like you could, if it's a personal journey, I'm sure. But in my mind, if you've ever featured in Buffy, if you've ever featured in Friends, if you've ever been in The X-Files, things like that, then you're probably good. You don't have anything to prove to anyone.
If there's any other character that you would have done a one-man show about, but it was probably just a bit too obscure, or it's probably not enough room to stretch out that long, but you're kind of like, oh, that would just be really funny.
A different show?
Yeah, like another show, anything. It could be anything from... But you kind of have reservations about it because...
I don't know. I mean, I've got a few ideas. I've sort of started tinkering with a new show, but I don't want to give any info about that just yet. But there's like some of my favorite shows that I would love to do but will not approach are things like BoJack Horseman.
That could be funny with the mask on.
That's
brilliant.
Although I suppose at the moment I'm trying to do my sort of approach is a character that's a background character. Or not necessarily background, but has a slightly different take on things. How do we not give the exact same retelling? How can I give someone else's view on things? So I suppose if I was doing, the X-Files, then I'd have to go through maybe one of the lone gunmen,
I didn't really see X-Files.
Oh, right. Okay.
No, I haven't, but I respect it. I respect it. It's not because I haven't seen it. It's just...
What were your favourite shows? In your sort of teens?
In the teens, right?
Yeah.
Let's throw some out there that I would definitely watch.
Like, you've got... I think everyone loves The Simpsons.
Yes.
You know,
Fresh Prince or something
Fresh
like that.
Fresh Prince. Exactly. It was the ones that just played around sort of 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
So you've got The Simpsons, Fresh Prince, maybe...
What else came on after?
There was...
Malcolm in the Middle.
Malcolm in the Middle. Sorry. Ah, so good. Have you watched that recently? Still good.
I haven't too much.
I mean, and then who knew he then turned into Walter White?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes, that's the dad, of course. So he's had a great career.
Oh, yeah, phenomenal actor. But, I mean, there were so many great actors in what was considered to be, like, kids' TV.
Yes.
There's a whole bunch that you could go back. At the moment, again, I'm sort of, as I said, I did Friends and then Buffy. It's quite a 90s fest.
It was. On TV, do you remember? It came on about 6 o'clock or something like that. That's what you're talking about.
Like, yeah.
So it was that time, really. That's amazing.
But yeah, what else could I do? I mean, I'm not going to try and do the Fresh Prince.
No, no, that'll just be the wrong vibe, I think.
It's not my story right now. I've never been to Bel Air, so I wouldn't know what I'm talking about. Yeah, yeah. You know,
unless you were the one of the kids in the class, you know, when the cornflake. Do you remember that cornflake guy? Whatever his name
was. Yeah, amazing. I think I'd have a better luck doing something like Biker Grove.
Yeah.
Well, I'm originally from Birmingham, and
oh, right, yeah.
I really feel like there's a lack of representation of people of Brummies on the stage at the moment.
So, how would you do if you had to make a show? Because every city has got a show, you know, like Emmerdale or like London, you know, they've got EastEnders. What would you give Birmingham?
Well, we've got Peaky Blinders.
Oh, yeah, you've got Peaky Blinders, yeah.
So that's the sort of the latest outing for us. And before that, it was Crossroads, which was sort of less glamorous.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was cancelled. But I think it had a good few seasons.
What was it about? Was that a police officer show?
It was set in, I think, a hotel.
Crossroads.
In the Midlands. Yeah.
I remember Family Affairs, and that got cancelled.
Oh, and Doctors. Doctors is set in Birmingham as well.
The sad thing is, me and you actors, that we probably, you know, I was on The Bill. That was my first acting job.
You got on The Bill?
Yeah.
Ah, oh, I would have loved to be on The Bill. I auditioned for The Bill.
Did you?
I remember, yeah.
What was the part?
It was for a bad guy. I think it was just like a generic robber, bit of a thief.
Yeah, yeah.
But I apparently, you know, they didn't see it in me.
Oh, that's good. That's kind of a good
thing. Who did you play?
It was, a thief. Like a guy who's wrongly accused of a crime.
Oh, right. Nice.
Kind of playing to a whole lot of social issues. But it was good. It was like a one episode thing, though.
Oh, nice. And, but Michael, you seem too young to have been on The Bill, because that was cancelled back in, when was that? It was like 2009? Maybe 2010?
Yeah, I was born in 1990, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
How old do you think I was? Well, I don't know. You've just got a fresh face, man.
That's the paying age. But if I grow a beard, I can look like the Revenant or something like
okay.
that.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm talking about the bear.
Yeah. Versatility, yeah.
But I was in it in 2008. So it was just about... I think they cancelled the show about 2 years later.
You slipped in and they were like, that's it, we've done
just
it.
Just about.
We've covered everything.
Hell-bent on getting something like that, because it was just needed. It was the only show, really.
For, oh, yeah.
To getting in, like, young actors as boom, 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 or just giving people one episode, but it would be great for your... Just opening the door for you.
Yeah. And a great experience as well. You know, yeah. I did an episode of Doctors when I first graduated from drama school, and it was just brilliant, you know, just a few days filming, and they move so fast, and you get like two takes, you know, the first first one's just to make sure that the boom isn't in shot, and the second one's but it's such a great learning curve.
I know. I mean, so what's the most proud of moment in your acting career, would you say? And it doesn't have to be something, just something, maybe it could be like you really wanted to work on a film, or maybe it was a play, or working with a particular actor. Is there anything that you kind of that you have on your CV?
Yeah, it's interesting, because there's different, I think there's a difference, certainly for me, between like, you know, the times I was most excited and then things that look good on the CV.
Yeah, and they're both, yeah.
We're kind of trying to balance the, you know, they say the three things that you should look for a job is that, you know, it's creatively fulfilling, that it pays well, or that it furthers your career in some way. And I always remember my first ever acting job when I was 11. I wasn't like a child actor, but I got a professional job when I was 11 in Oliver at the big theatre, the Alexandra Theatre in Birmingham. And it blew my mind. I absolutely loved it. But then again, my first job when I got to work in Chicago was amazing. I did Potted Potter, the show I was telling you about before. And we just went off to Chicago. And I thought, this is crazy. I'm being paid to do a show that I love in a city that I never dreamed that I'd end up in. I ended up doing that show in Las Vegas for 4 months.
Whoa.
Yeah, like a genuine Las Vegas residency.
What was that like? So you were paid to be in Las Vegas. What did you make of Las Vegas? Did you get involved in the... Did you have a fear and loathing moment?
Yeah, I got involved.
So anything that stuck out about Las Vegas? Because it's got a lot of misconceptions. Because when you see it on the in the films and stuff, I'm pretty sure it is like that. But
it's certainly got
crazy.
Yeah, it's got a glamorous side to it. People tend to just think of it as a weekend spot for, you know, debauched either Hindus or stag dudes, that kind of thing. But and there is very much that part of it. You know, you can go to all the casinos and you can lose your money in an instant. But it's also in the middle of Nevada, which is beautiful. And, you know, you need a car to get around to enjoy it. But there's great hiking and climbing and canoeing, all of those sort of outdoor sports. It's brilliant for. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. And, of course, you get to see all the big shows as well. Magicians and cabarets. And it's a ridiculous fun place to be, yeah.
Yeah, that's the cool thing. They put on so many, like, you know, great big shows and there's just so much money going into it.
Oh, yeah. It's wild. Yeah, really. I mean, I would say 4 months is a long time to be there, especially with a two-man show. But it was really fun and I was really glad that I got the opportunity to do it.
Yeah, and I think to play in front of an American audience and the UK audiences, which ones are kind of work better for you? Would you say?
Ooh, well, you know, I mean, since it's only probably, well, I don't know, how many Americans listen to your show?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, actually. You probably not say anything. Let's say you prefer the London one because you've actually got the show coming up in October.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. London. Well, it is always nice to play to a home crowd. And to be honest, there's a difference. I think American audiences are far more vocal. And they will whoop and cheer. They'll dress up and come to the show. They'll hang out to meet you afterwards. Whereas, you know, I think we're a bit more used to theatre etiquette in the UK. And also, we sort of, you know, you keep yourself to yourself, and you might send a nice tweet afterwards, but you wouldn't want to impose by
asking
a conversation. So they both have their benefits.
Well, we've got the show coming up and it's in it's October and it's at the King's Head Theatre. Where can we get the tickets from?
Absolutely. You can get tickets on the King's Head Theatre website, which is, have I got it up here?
What are they doing in terms of the whole COVID thing? Is it going to be restricted viewing or is this, how's that all working? Has that impacted your production in any way?
It's certainly, we're still rehearsing in a COVID safe environment. And the main thing is that we are trying to keep everyone as safe and comfortable as possible. The theatre, King's Head Theatre in Islington, it usually holds about 120. Mm-hmm. I think they have a slightly reduced seating, just dropping it down to about 80. So there will be space in between seats. But also, I'm not sure exactly what the policy is. We'll have to see close to the time what happens, whether people have to wear masks or whatever.
Yeah.
But really, we just don't want anyone to feel uncomfortable. We're still trying to encourage people back to the theatre. So yeah. I would say come down, you'll be safe, you'll feel comfortable, and you won't be put in a position that you wouldn't want to be.
We'll put you in no positions, people, okay?
No positions.
No awkward positions. But the cool thing about it is that it is a small theater, 120 people. I kind of like that. You know, it's going to be immersive. You know, when you go down there and it feels like we're just having this experience, you know, with the people around you.
Oh, yeah. I prefer that. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's one of the great things about fringe theater. You really get to, as a performer, you get to try out something that wouldn't necessarily immediately have an opportunity to go and be on in the West End, for example. And as an audience member, you just get to see these fun, interesting things, way before anyone else.
Yeah, and I don't know why I did this, but I bought two tickets at the front row, right? I don't know why I did that, because I didn't realize the layout of the theater, you know what I mean? And I just had this vision of someone being in the way, you know? So I was like, I'll do the front row.
Oh, yeah, no, perfect.
But then I'm thinking, I think no one else bought the front row. I think a few people started doing it. They were scattered, and I was like, I've got to show support, because I hate when people don't buy the front row and trying to fill it out, because I could see. So I was like, well, someone's going to have to... And I was like, better me, somebody who's can tolerate it. You know,
absolutely. Don't worry. I'd say that there's a degree of audience interaction, but I only pick people who look like they're up for it.
Yeah.
And there's no, this isn't like a stand-up show. You're not going to be picked on or anything.
You can pick on me.
I'd say, be brave. Come sit at the front. Yeah. To be honest, even if you're on the third or fourth row, it's a small theatre. We're going to have pretty much direct eye contact throughout.
Yeah. I thought it would be a cool idea. I thought I want to be immersed in it. And I bought two tickets as well, because I want to bring, I don't know who I'm going to bring, but my sister heard about it as well. She's like, I want to go. Come. I was like, no, the ticket's not for you. You go buy a ticket. I'm encouraging people to buy tickets. A lot of people have heard this. My friend was like, wow, can I come? I was like, buy your own ticket, yeah? I bought two for me, because I might bring a date. I might bring somebody who's like really into the Buffy thing, or I might bring one of my writer friends who I think could just be inspired by seeing somebody do something like this. And I think, because you're so prolific, you've done, you're really at your sort of, a seasoned warrior, shall I say, you've got all your talents at your disposal right now, and you're kind of just hitting off these shows, which is good. So I want to, maybe bring someone who can be who you will inspire. So,
well, thank you very much. I hope everyone follows suit and buys two tickets, even if they only need one.
that's my style right now. I think I know I'm going to go, obviously because of last year. So I'm trying to make up for the most of that, with experiences. Yeah. Like I said, trying new things, and also bringing people into that, and sharing the experiences. I think that's cool.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that's a great way. I think we all need to sort of jump back in and, get back in. I've been to see a few shows recently, and I just love being back, seeing what's going on, what people have been up to. And live entertainment in all its forms. Mm. Let's save it. Let's bring it back.
I think it's coming back. Is there any shows that you're looking forward to seeing, or...
That is a very good question. Well, I mean, there's the big ones that they've rolled out. Things like Jerusalem, I know is coming back, is going to be in the West End next year. But there's also, to be honest, my favourite things are like theatre companies that I have seen work from in the past. There's a few that I love. So Rum and Clay is this great company run by... a pair of physical theatre guys, Matt and Julian, and they're brilliant. And my friend Hamish, who directs my shows, sort of working with them on their new show. There's a lot of comedy, a lot of friends who do sketch, stand-up, character comedy that I'm looking forward to. You just got to sort of find your local venues and see what's on and get down there.
That's what it's all about. You inspired me now. It's all about the fringe now, I think, supporting these like local shows. Again, it's just, you have that inside joke of being, you're the ones in the room. It's different than watching, a DVD or a, did I say DVD? Netflix or whatever.
Sure.
When it's to the VHS. Yeah, special. It's special. So anyway, I don't take too much of your time as well. We've been talking for an hour, which is good. There's so many things we can talk about.
Yeah.
So next time I see you, we'll be on your show. Are you coming out? Are you meeting people? Or is it just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Out the fire exit and...
Sneak out, yeah.
Screw those guys. Into like Pulp Fiction or something.
I will definitely be sticking around after every show. If only to sort of... to see what people think of the show, but also to find out, what people would like improved, if I've missed any sort of parts. That's... I love hearing the feedback, especially from people that are passionate about the show, about Buffy, and, you know, just sort of big fans.
Yeah, 100%. And I've booked the last show. So. Ah.
Brilliant. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be some drinks. There'll be a party afterwards.
Yeah, I picked wisely because I'm not going to pick your first night. And then you're like, sorry, I've got to go. I was like, let me pick the last one. You're going to be happy. It's done. You would have more energy, or you might not. I don't know. But I think the last show is always the best one, really, isn't it? Because you're just like.
Yeah, it's. I think certainly with these first few shows, each one is going to be slightly different. So, I mean, come on down. Yeah. See what happens, and I'll see you there afterwards for sure.
Awesome. Where can people find you online if they want to support your work other than the tickets?
Yeah, sure.
Twitter and all that. Instagram. I don't know if you have all that.
I do indeed. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at not Murphy because Murphy was taken. So I thought, what about not Murphy?
Murphy. Who is the original Murphy then?
I don't know. I mean, it's like the number one most common surname in Ireland. So probably someone there. And also we get about the Murphys. So we're all out of the shop.
Lots of Murphys in comedy as well, as they've taken. So.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Sure. Otherwise, brendanmurphy.me is my website, and you can get links to all my different shows on there.
Well, you heard it there, folks. Brendanmurphy.me. All the shows, come and support Brendan's work. One man show, Spike. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Get your tickets now. They are selling out, and it's in October, so that's real soon. Looking forward to it as well. So thank you, Brendan, for coming down.
Thanks so much, Mikey.
Peace.
Cheers. Take it easy, man.